Good evening. If we could have everyone find a seat, that would be great. It is 7 o'clock, and we're going to attempt to start on time. Some people have asked about the length of this. We expect it to be not less than 60 minutes, but we will not let it go beyond 90 minutes.
Play ball.
Play ball. I'm Peter Payette. I'm the news director at Interlochen Public Radio. Aaron Selbig is an announcer and a reporter at IPR. We really thank you for being here. We were excited to do this event, and we are glad it came together. We have Morgan Springer and David Castleman here. If they could just wave their hands, they will come around. If you still have a card that you want to get up to us, then they will take it from you and pass it up. So here are the. Oh, I want to thank Diane Baraboo and all the folks at the Opera House for quickly arranging this venue for us. So we don't have a large number of ground rules. All the panelists agreed to a somewhat flexible format. We're trying not to use stopwatches up here and time everything. We think that everyone can say all that they need. So there will be some opportunity for the moderators to follow up with questions, and there will be an opportunity for rebuttals and some back and forth, and we will move through the evening. We do ask that the audience remain silent. We do thank our panelists for trusting us and being willing to go with a more kind of flexible and open format. So Aaron is going to introduce our guests, and we will get underway.
Hello, thanks Peter. Good evening, everyone. Representing the no side tonight against Proposition 3 are members of Stand Up TC, Janine Easterday and Paul Danielson, here at the table in the middle of the stage. Janine Easterday is a retired nurse who worked for Munson for 39 years. She's a former member of the Traverse City Planning Commission and the City Commission. Paul Danielson is the proprietor of Trattoria Stella in the Grand Traverse Commons and the Franklin on Front Street. Paul is a former board member of the Michigan Land Use Institute. Representing the yes side supporting Proposition 3 are members of the Save Our Downtown Campaign Committee, Brenda Quick and Grant Parsons at the far end of the stage. Brenda Quick is an attorney and professor of law emeritus at Michigan State University. Grant Parsons is a native of Traverse City and is a local attorney with an interest in local land use practices. And we've agreed before the debate that each side will begin with an opening statement, and we are going to go to Brenda and Grant on the yes side to begin with the opening statement.
Thank you very much. First, I would like to thank Interlochen Public Radio for sponsoring this event. We were delighted to hear that you were interested in this topic and want to allow the people of Traverse City the opportunity to learn about it and so that they can make an informed choice when they go to the polls. Second, we would like to thank the hundreds of volunteers that we have who have supported us with their time, who have supported us with their hard-earned dollars. We are a grassroots organization funded entirely from donations from people who care about Traverse City's future, and we're grateful for your support. And finally, we'd like to thank our opponents for being willing to come out this evening and to debate this issue with us so that we can get all of the issues in front of the public. What are we about? A yes vote will amend our city charter to require that no building in Traverse City that exceeds 60 feet in height can be constructed unless there is an affirmative vote of the people. First, let me make this perfectly clear. This ballot proposal is absolutely legal. You have been told that it is not legal because of the opinion of a single staff attorney who happens to be employed by the Attorney General's office. If this opinion were binding, we wouldn't be here tonight. That would be the end of it. Only a court of law can determine whether a law is valid or not, not a single attorney who happens to work for the state. If this amendment is passed, it will be binding and it will be legal. And I hope during the debate we have the opportunity to explain this further. I must also say at this point that for the love of me, I cannot figure out why some people are spending thousands of dollars to try and make sure that the good citizens of Traverse City are denied the right to vote on such an important issue. But that's why we're here tonight. Our opponents do not want you to have a choice. They don't want you to have a voice. Our opponents will tell you that we have a representative form of government, and we should leave these decisions to seven officials. We do not agree. On every ballot where you cast a vote, there are some issues which are considered too important to leave in the hands of an elected few. Whether or not to permanently change the skyline and the character of Traverse City, a change that can impact this city's future aesthetically, economically, and environmentally, is one of these issues. We all know that significant changes can benefit a community, but we also know that significant changes can have catastrophic results. Given the gravity of this issue, we do not believe it should be left in the hands of the few who unfortunately have been known to attempt to impose their own agendas and desires on the people. By example, a court of law recently found that our city commission did not do its duty to ensure all standards were met before granting a building permit to build 200-foot-tall buildings. The court vacated that building permit and told the commissioners to go back and do their jobs. That was months ago, and as of this date, nothing has been done. You have been told that this will cost the people thousands of dollars. That is not only untrue, the opposite is in fact correct. This will allow the taxpayers the right to have some say where their tax dollars will be spent, and to ensure that property tax dollars that owners of expensive pieces of property should pay are in fact paid and not declared exempt. You have been told that this is a vote against affordable housing. That is simply not true. We have challenged all developers in our area to construct buildings up to 60 stories tall and make all of their units affordable. We will support them, and no vote will be required. There are similar buildings all over the United States, including Michigan, that meet this description. There is no reason why it can't happen here as well. We want to preserve the best of what Traverse City has to offer. We want to see that development moves forward, but we want to see that it moves forward responsibly and in such a way to ensure Traverse City's continued economic vitality. Finally, this amendment is not an attempt to direct people on how they should vote on future projects. That's up to you. Whether you vote yes, whether you vote no, that will be your choice. It is simply an amendment that will guarantee the citizens of this town the right to vote. It will give the people a voice to decide what we want our city to be. Thank you.
All right, and now we will go for an opening statement from the no side opposing Proposition 3, Janine Easterday and Paul Danielson.
The proposition is ill thought. In an effort to prevent one single project, this proposal will affect all of Traverse City. It'll affect Munson, it'll affect the college, it'll affect the commons, it'll affect lots of other things. To suggest that the pro-prop three people aren't trying to sway the voters toward anything in the future, well, that's kind of tough for Munson or something like that. They say they're for Munson, they say they're for the college, which I believe they are. But once this thing is passed, it's not anyone's control. It's up to the voters. If the Munson is working really hard right now to try and push through a 10-story pediatric and natal unit, and they're trying really hard to get it done by the city commission meeting on November 7th, the night before the ballot, because if it doesn't pass by then, and this passes, it's going to be in limbo for a long time. So it's cold comfort to Munson that this is that Save Our Downtown is on their side. Three, it's illogical. We have a system of government based on decades and decades of work by lots of very smart and very hard-thinking people. You know, we've established zoning, we've changed zoning over and over and over. We've elected officials to do the job that we want. To say that the officials that we elect aren't qualified to do this is just disingenuous. We've, specifically, Jim Carruthers, who's our mayor, who I hope is out here tonight. Hi, Jim. He was part of a slate that was elected as opposed to the Federated Project down on Front Street. And they ran specifically to stop that project. And they were elected. I voted for him. And they went in and they did their job, and the project was stopped. In this case, the slate of commissioners that was elected were people that were pro this. They've stated it beforehand. They were very upfront about it. And they got the most votes from the people in the city. So to say that our system of government is broken and needs to be fixed by something like this, to me, it seems like it's overriding what we're supposed to be doing. So thank you.
Okay, I'm going to read.
Can I make a statement?
You may jump in. Go ahead, Janine.
Thank you. I too would like to thank you and Aaron and IPR for hosting this event, and thanks to the audience for taking your very valuable time to be here tonight. As a past president of the League of Women Voters, I've worked diligently for over 30 years to protect and preserve that most deeply held privilege of the American people, the right to vote. While voting is crucial in a democracy, this proposition undercuts the value of a representative government. Michigan specifically enacted the Zoning Enabling Act to provide stability and certainty and to balance the interests of the public with private property rights. It has been upheld by the Supreme Court of Michigan time and time again that the city charter may not conflict with the requirements of a properly adopted zoning ordinance. This ensures that the zoning approval process is not discriminatory and that the rights of all interested parties can be heard and protected. Prop 3 would actually serve to limit the voice and input of the community. The current zoning process allows for dozens of opportunities for public input at the Planning Commission and the City Commission levels, in addition to options such as email and surveys that are not available to the voter. Visioning exercises have been held for every area of this city, from the small neighborhood parks to the Bayfront Park, from corridor plans to street charrettes, and from fishing piers to public art. Each process allows anyone interested to attend and share their point of view. These opportunities inform the public and allow for diverse discussions that may not otherwise occur. Under Prop 3, only city residents who are registered when the vote is held can participate, and it's limited to a yes or no choice. If communities within regions are not working together, they are effectively working against one another. We must behave as a community, or we put our future sustainability at risk. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to read the proposal, at least the language that would be added to the city charter. And it is hereby declared that buildings over 60 feet in height are generally inconsistent with the residential and historical character of Traverse City. Therefore, any proposal for construction of a building with a height above 60 feet shall not be approved by the city or city commission until after the proposal is submitted to and approved by a majority of city electors at a regular election or at a special election. And we had a couple of questions with people asking, what is the connection between the height of a building and the character of the building or town character? Why don't we start with the yes voters?
If I might raise my voice on this, the city zoning code right now defines the right of developers to develop as of right at 60 feet. Above 60 feet, the zoning code 1364 says it has to meet exceptional fact-finding to be allowed. So by definition, it's above what is routinely acceptable in town. The TIF or the DDA's mission statement expressly, if you go online, look at the website, the DDA mission statement specifically refers to scale, and we do not want to raise money for outsized parking decks or glass and steel structures. So to say why is height important, that is an arbitrary decision that was put in place by the city fathers and mothers to define something that requires extraordinary taxes to support it through increased infrastructure loading, And in most cases, in every case that we've seen in this town, a building of that height requires subsidies. And this state and this city are being taxed into subsidizing private developments that are a ruinous amount of subsidies.
Well, I think if you have read any of what Stand Up TC has put forth to the public, you will understand that the historic commons is tradition. Most of that building is above 60 feet. The spires, I believe, are up to 105 feet. It is a historic building. It's a beautiful building, and it is the character of Traverse City. The other one that's commonly mentioned is the Park Place. That building has been here since, I believe, it's the 30s, and that's the character of Traverse City. So then there are any other number of buildings. The Opera House is 60 feet in height, but it does have a peak, this very building that we're in, does have a peak that brings the building at higher than 60 feet in height. Those buildings all have character. We also have new buildings that have character, and we have buildings that are less than 60 feet that really don't do much for the character of the city. So to connect building height to character escapes me. I really can't answer that question in a positive direction, because I believe the character of Traverse City has been well established in all building height.
Janine and Paul, I'm sorry. Would you like to follow up,
Brenda? Yeah, I would. I'd like to respond to that a little bit more. First off, the 60 feet in height by right does not include spires. It does not include steeples. It would not include minarets on mosques, should a mosque be built in here. There's an exception to the rule. When you talk about a building height by right, it includes the building. It doesn't include these appendages to the building. That's one thing that people need to be aware of. So if we hear about a church steeple, for example, being taller than 60 feet, that's because it falls under the exception. There is nothing whatsoever in this proposed amendment to the city charter that would change the definition of a building. It would remain exactly the same as it is today. And we're talking about a building height as it is defined. We're not talking about changing that whatsoever. So that's one thing that's important. The second thing that I think is important, some people may be very happy to hear this. Architectural Digest came out on October 10th with a statement. They determined the 21 of the best small buildings in America, and the number one small town in America is listed as Traverse City, and that's an Architectural Digest. Now, architecture matters, and there also was a report done by Edward McMahon, who is with Heritage Tourism Update and the Conservation Fund and president of Scenic America, and one of the points that he has brought up is he said, what people have to do if they want to preserve their town is they have to preserve the look of that town. Because you can try everything you want to preserve what you have, but when people come to your community, it's what it looks like that matters. And he said that you have to recognize, among other things, your architectural assets. You have to recognize that because that's what people come for. So that's very, very important. And then also, we have had two buildings in this town in the last 86 years that have been approximately 100 feet tall. One in 1930, and that was, of course, the Park Place Hotel, which, by the way, zoning was just coming into being in the state of Michigan then. And the second one was in 1973, and that was Riverview Terrace, which sits considerably back off the road. That's it. 86 years, two buildings.
Let me, Paul, you want to speak, and you can. I want to follow up quickly, though. The language you're proposing for the charter does not distinguish between peaks and so forth. It just says the height of a building. So I assume the distinction you're making is that in zoning, the height of a building in zoning language does not count those amenities at the
Peter, we're still going to have the zoning code's going to stay in effect. The architectural definitions are going to stay in effect, and the ornamentation you can find on the top of a building, a little spire or a little elevator shaft or something like that. Those are not included in the building height.
But we are not. Let me understand, because I think you've been careful to say you're not amending the zoning code. So then why would those the standards of the zoning code apply when this amendment to the charter would be put into action?
Well, because when you have two laws, the concept, you read all laws that are written perform different functions. Zoning standards are going to apply to zoning. The building still has to meet zoning, and it still has to meet architectural standards. This is a policy vote on taxation and process and public input. So all of it will apply. Am I answering your questions?
You are. Paul.
Well, if I could, we've opened up a whole bunch of different conversations here. The first one, Grant mentioned the often used statement discussing the small town character to protect small character and our historic buildings, pedestrian scale, tree-lined streets, and special natural and cultural amenities that make us unique. Well, let's remember, this isn't part of our city's charter. This isn't part of any group's decision. This was part of the DDA back in 1996 trying to sell TIF 97. That's what it was. And if you want to take that one, you can also take the rest of the statement that includes lines like, while allowing for greater building densities and tax base within the district, as well as eliminating the experience of walking by parking lots by encouraging infill development. So cherry-picking quotes, it's a little disingenuous. There's a lot said in that statement. And to take the one you like, I get why, but it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
This is an audience question, and it's directed to Janine and Paul on the no side. Why should TIF and other public expenditures on tall buildings fall on the citizens of Traverse City to foot the bill for private residential units?
Well, I'd be happy to say this proposition doesn't say anything about TIF. It's not talking about TIF. We're not here to talk about TIF. We're talking about Proposition 3. You can look at a building that's 60 feet tall that could be asking for all the same things. There are other ones that are in process right now that are looking for the same things as a building over 60 feet tall. All this thing is talking about is a building height. You can build a building that's three times as long, that's 59 feet tall, and have all the same things that every developer's asking for anyway. So this isn't what that is. If we want to have a conversation about changing TIF, or about changing zoning, or about changing brownfield, let's have that conversation, but let's do it at City Hall and do it that way. The city doesn't control brownfield. The county and the state control brownfield and how it's administered. The city has nothing to do with it. TIF, we established TIF, not we, but our city established TIF a long time ago, TIF 97 and TIF 2, to try and encourage development downtown. I would posit to anybody here that the downtown of Traverse City today is a lot different than downtown of Traverse City 20 years ago, and I would suggest it's for the better.
Could I say Traverse City does have something to do with TIF and DDA and Brownfield? I mean, that was, if you remember Judge Rogers, who's a former mayor of Traverse City, London School of Economics scholar and U of M Law School, and he looked at what the city found in regard to this one project. We're using this as an example, but it's what can happen. He said, you didn't tell us what the infrastructure cost was. You didn't tell us what the tax capture was. You didn't tell us what the tax subsidies are. And he used pretty pointed words. And so when you say the city doesn't have a voice, that's exactly why we're here with Prop 3. It is to say where the city government fails under Section 1364 of the zoning code to do its duty to define your tax burden and your infrastructure load and your change in character, you need a vote of the people. And that will encourage the City Commission and the Planning Commission to sharpen its pencil and answer those questions raised by Judge Rogers. That's what's fair. A fair disclosure, for example, by Munson was made, no tax subsidies, it's on the campus. We can have a yes vote on development as well as a yes vote on Prop 3.
But Grant, could you, I think one of Paul's points is that if those are problems, and if they're problems in how Traverse City is handling developments, they can be problems for developments under 60 feet. So if we have the problems that Judge Rogers cited in his ruling, then does Prop 3 really address them everywhere they might be happening?
Well, I'm not sure what ones are being talked about here, because the big ones, when people have had a vote in the past, 1986, we voted on Bayview Mall because of size, character, and downtown loading. 2006 or 7, we voted on bonding the Federated project, and now we're fighting this battle in 2016. I'm not sure what projects under 60 feet have asked for $22 million in subsidies or a very significant change in the character of its area. I haven't seen that.
I'd like to bring out the point that the Indigo Hotel built that hotel within right. It also used a fairly significant portion of the brownfield funds that were allotted to that brownfield plan area. Regardless of, and I can cite other sites and other buildings. I mean, the warehouse district, even the Inside Out Gallery has used brownfield funds to upgrade that building. The building next to it that houses the Workshop Brewery used brownfield funds to clean up the property. So there are examples, but regardless, you can cite examples for the rest of the evening if we like, and use up our 90 minutes on that, that's not going to change the fact that this proposal does not address any of those issues. And I think you're right on, Peter, that what we're looking at here is the proposal for the construction of a building. That's what's in the proposal. And our differences of opinion with how we fund those proposals isn't going to change because of this.
Well, I just hark back to the fact, I mean, first of all, brownfield, if there are buildings under 60 feet that are using brownfield funds, which were traditionally intended to clean up pollution, I mean, we support that in spades. That's fantastic. That is not what we're talking about, these runaway subsidies. That's a social good funded by the public for public benefit to keep the junk out of the bay. But the idea that 60 feet was declared the ceiling for uses of right by the city denotes the different area of public resource use that you get into with tall buildings. 60 feet sounds arbitrary in a vacuum, but the city commission struggled with that issue because of the loading on this little bitty town trapped between Boardman Lake and the West Bay. It's a pinch point, right? It's a hammer and an anvil. Our city can't stand too much loading in a particular place, and the densification that happens with a 100-foot building is something people ought to be able to examine more closely, and that's why the City Commission did that.
If I may, Grant, you're talking about the City Commission doing its job and weighing the issues that are before the city. And we live in a representative democracy where we elect members of the Planning Commission and the City Commission. And they went through the process on the Pine Street development. And of course, Judge Rogers said that process was flawed, and he vacated the permit for Pine Street and he sent it back. But still, it did go through that process. And there has been plenty of debate at City Commission meetings and all of that. I guess my question is, why can't, if you don't like the result of something that the City Commission does, why not address it the old-fashioned way, voting people out of office and campaigning for people to replace them? Why does it have to be Proposition 3?
Brenda and I are struggling to see who goes for
it. We really
want
to.
Flip a coin?
Okay.
We both really want to answer this, but I told him that he had just answered the last one, so I want my turn. I think what you're talking about is we have a representative government, so why not just go with the representative government? If we don't like their decisions, if we think they're doing a poor job, what you would anticipate is that you would simply anticipate that the remedy would be you would elect new officials, or in the alternative, if you wanted to get serious about it, you'd have a recall election. and then you would replace that. Well, you've got a real problem with that in this particular case. You know, if we're talking about something as simple as, let's say, you know, we have this ordinance in Traverse City that says there are certain hours of the evening or in the early morning hours when you're not supposed to park on city streets. So if we are, we have a city council and that, or that city commission votes to change that, to repeal that law and say, nope, people can park on the city streets all the time. And so what happens, we discover 6 months, a year later, that that's not working. And we're not happy with it. So sure, we can go back in and we can say, repeal that law, introduce the old law back, we can fix that. And or we can simply say, we don't like what you've done, and so we're gonna replace you. We're gonna elect somebody new. In this case, you don't have that same remedy available to you, and here's why. Because if a city commission approves a tall building and the people aren't happy, yes, we can wait until the next time around when that person is eligible for an election. That might be 3 years or more. We can try and execute a recall election. The problem is that is one of the most complicated procedures that you have in Michigan law, which means it takes months and months and months. In the meantime, what happens, but the developer starts building the building. And once they start, under law, that building belongs to them and their right to continue it belongs to them. And the only way at that point that the city can draw it back is to pay that developer perhaps millions of dollars to, in essence, buy that project back. So what do we have? We have a situation where we cannot repair it once the damage has been done. So what we have to do as a community is we have to have the option to prevent that from happening in the first instance if we as a community feel that that's the appropriate response.
Janine and Paul, do you want to respond on that same topic of representative democracy and the allowing the city commission process to work its course versus Proposition 3?
I think what it boils down to is, are you going to trust our government? You're either going to trust that our government is going to do the right thing, and you're going to live with that. We all have situations where things haven't gone our way, but you figure out a way to work with it and to deal with it. As a planning commissioner, I spent hours and hours and hours poring over blueprints, and I don't even know what you call it nowadays. My time of life, we called it blueprints. But we pored over blueprints. We pore over stormwater retention and setbacks and window colors and apertures and steeples and all kinds of things. And I spent hours as a planning commissioner going over the details of that. So you to try to relegate a project to one item of building height is not going to give you the kind of information you need to make a good decision. If you trust the people that you've elected, if you trust that they will appoint good, solid neighbors, these are our neighbors, and they're doing this voluntarily. You can call people at any time. So, you know, I really don't know that I necessarily believe in that you can re-elect new people. There is a time frame difference. But I think basically what we're talking about is, do we believe in our representative form of government? Or do we think that we can vote, which really is a yes or no? And anybody who's in any kind of business nowadays, or most anybody who's on a board, boards used to vote yes or no. But yes or no makes winners and losers. And we don't want to make winners or losers. We want to make consensus. We want to figure out a way to move forward positively. Do we always get what we want? No. But can we figure out a way to live together in a neighborly fashion? I think we can do that.